Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Michael.
I have some announcements here.
All right.
Sign up soon for our virtual Zen Cooks Workshop this coming Sunday, June 21st, and make some delicious enchiladas in a fun and supportive environment. Registration closes this Friday at 5 p.m. Pacific. And it's time to buddy up for practice support. Reflective listening buddies and keeping commitments buddies start new quarters July 15th. The registration deadline is July 1st. And for these and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, please press star 6 and then 1 to make that show. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is fabulous. I think we're ready here, Sherry.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, hi, this is Roberta. Can you hear me?
Hey, Roberta, yes.
Hey, great to be with you all. Yeah, so I'm in the Keeping Commitments program and been working your teachings on and off for quite a while. And I just want to say that as I get closer to actually completing my commitments and doing things that get my creative juices expressed, I have the juices flowing, but it's hard to finish. And it also affects very much my career and everything. The closer I get to that, to what I really, really have identified I want to do, the more vicious these voices get, and the more louder they get, and the more convincing they get. And I know that this is common, but I'm just as I'm undergoing this, I just felt that I wanted to check in about this.
It's shocking, isn't it? Isn't it shocking? Because it's so counter to what we've been taught to believe, right? Those voices are there because they're helping you succeed. They're egging you on. They're helping you to, yeah? And then, as you say, through no help from them, you are finding yourself being successful, and what do? They come at you viciously to try to get you to stop. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And you know, Roberta, I got to tell you, every time somebody has that experience, I'm so pleased because, of course, I've spent decades trying to convince people that that's what's going on, but it sounds so implausible, right? Mm-hmm. And then we have the experience for ourselves. It's like, you know, when people get to this point where they can be, successful at something they've been working at forever, and they start hearing voices talking to them about how you should kill yourself. It's like, wait a minute, what is going on here? And then we get it. Oh, yeah, all that time, they were not on my side. They were just trying to get attention.
I guess from fear or any other reason. Something that I realized, as you were explaining this, is that when I have put myself up publicly and put my work out, I get good feedback, somewhat indifferent, blah, blah, different kinds. But there have been occasions when I did feel that I was being attacked or the result of aggression or something.
Oh,
and then I would
always
say to myself, you see, this is why.
Okay. I'm going to say again, no.
Yeah.
Well, that was a voice saying to you, you see,
right.
This is why. And if we listen carefully, this is why you shouldn't put yourself out there.
Right.
Yeah. And so what is the message there, right? And my translation of that is, so what you should do is stay home all the time and just be in relationship with me. Okay, I'll beat you up. I'll push you around. I'll tell you what's wrong with you. I'll frighten you. But, you know, at least you won't be getting it from strangers.
Oh, yeah, my gosh, it sounds like a parent with some kind of obsessive compulsion, but it's all acted out on my stage.
Yeah, or a jealous lover.
Oh,
right?
Yeah,
that kind of the battered partner syndrome where, you know, you're lucky to have me. You should stay home with me. Yeah, I may, you know, slap you around once in a while, but nobody else is going to want you. So, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I've watched this, you know, happen to people and always say, why do they do that? Why do they stay with them? But I understand, you know, I mean, I've got all of that in me.
Yeah. Oh, and it's self-hate. You know, that's the answer to the whole thing. Why is that happening? Well, self-hate, because I finally found somebody outside of me who treats me the way I'm treated inside. So it's a good match.
Right. And, you know, I do, you know, I have more, what's the word, insight in the rational mind, and also with, you know, some very helpful friends and companions I have, because, you know, they'll say, oh, well, yeah, I know you got that little bit of criticism and hostility, but there are also a bunch of other people who actually had good opinions or,
that's
you know,
right.
Know what I'm
that's
saying.
Right.
But if you added it up from a useful companion,
yes, it's just that we have been listening to that negativity for so long that the most loving, kind responses from people outside of us, they just can't penetrate it. Because that's our most intimate relationship is with that voice in the head. So that's the one we're gonna turn to. We're gonna listen to and we're gonna believe.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the other thing I think that it's really important for us to get is that everybody else is just like us. So, you know, self-hating people are often hateful, right? And so if I get criticized and beaten up, why not you? And so if I have a chance to put you down, you know, that old thing of if I put you down, I'm raised up. I'm better than you, right? Mm-hmm. And it's all sad and sick and perverse, but it is the way it is.
Yes. I really hear that and realize that the person who outside of me, you know, conventionally outside of me, who may be putting out hostility and criticism, that this is somebody who's really suffering, and you know, I usually find that out pretty quick.
Yes. And so we, you know, as soon as we get past that impulse in us to look to those negative voices and believe what that person is saying, we can get to a place of feeling sorry for them.
Right. Right.
It's their projection. And negativity, wherever it comes from, is being projected from its source. So if it's somebody outside of you, well, that's their life. That's who they are. Doesn't have anything to do with you. If it's inside your head, you know, it's egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate. Once again, it actually doesn't have anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So good to catch on to, isn't it?
It sure is. It sure is. Yeah.
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 And so I appreciate this very much. And it's lovely to have all these companions along the way.
Isn't it?
Also have to say that, you know, sometimes because the voices are so strong, then I actually need to stop or put aside my actual, you know, the work I put aside so that I just call it applying medicine or taking medicine. But if I, you know, was just this completely unneurotic person, I wouldn't be here talking to you, and then I wouldn't have met all of you. And it's pretty cool.
It is. And to find out that we are actually like every other human being on the planet. So that's a comfort.
Well, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Good.
Thank you so much. It is.
Oh,
great.
Thank you, Roberta. Go happy.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. Thank you,
Gasho.
Thanks for joining us, Roberta. That was a fabulous start to the show, Sherry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's good. It's so good that we have friends to help us keep a perspective.
Yes, it's kind of like that's what practice does for me when I can't see the larger perspective.
Yes, yeah. And it does, doesn't it? I mean, all we have to do, I can be however identified with whatever, and if I get into any kind of a practice conversation, I mean, it could be you and somebody else I'm listening to, have nothing to do with me, but it will pull me out of whatever that is, and bring me to a place of clarity. So it's very, very good, very helpful.
It is very good. Mm-hmm. And we have the caller here.
All right, wonderful, thank you.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Marianne.
Hey, Marianne.
Hey there, Sherry and Michael. I'm just calling because, I had this, I don't know if it's an insight, but it was a knowing something. And it came from listening to callers last week call into the morning radio show. And, you know, they were suffering. I could hear it. I could feel it, and just that their bravery and courage to phone in and just be so vulnerable kind of inspired me to.
Doesn't it just make you love them?
It does. So it made your advice was to. I think some of the guidance was to. Get in touch with the part of themselves that was suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, I am going to do that. And so I did, and I was very surprised at who showed up, and we had a long conversation for maybe 20 minutes, what I saw out of that was some other Sangha member had called it the big mind, the Sangha mind, and I just had this whole feeling, oh my gosh, as I work on myself, addressing, turning to face that part of myself that is suffering, I am doing it. I am healing, and that healing is going to these people who are suffering. I have no evidence, but that's what I think.
Well,
so strong.
I'm right there with you. We have no evidence, except for me, some of the people on the planet that I have the most respect for say essentially that same thing. You know, the image that the first time I encountered what I think you're describing is when the person said, I moved my hand and what is it, a butterfly on the other side of the universe moves its wings. You know, that kind of notion of how at one we are.
Yeah. I think, I felt like that because it their suffering evoked compassion for me, and then I was compassion for myself. It's that kind of compassion, that welling up, that I guess conditional love that made me go, oh, I feel like this healing is going for those other people. So
it's for everybody.
Yes. So I just was, just really, it wasn't just that I was just doing this work for myself, that there was
connect.
And that's what I wanted to share tonight.
Yeah. Well, again, we don't have any evidence, but I'm right with you. And you know, Marianne, the other place, the flip side of that feels also true for me, that when we are indulging ego, that it gives out an energy that affects everyone and everything. It's a negativity that affects everything, right? So it's kind of like making everything worse for everybody. And then on the other side of it, as you say, when you're coming back to presence, to unconditional love, you're healing. You're healing for everybody. You're healing everything. Because we're one.
So there's some other thing that has gone on in the last little while that I wonder if it's related to it. It's another thing I don't know. But all of a sudden, I am not striving. So I didn't realize I might have been striving to breathe. But all of a sudden, I feel when I sit to meditate that I am being breathed. Well, it's not.
Well, I'll tell you, Marianne, I think you're onto something here.
It's not just when I meditate, but it's just like in the last month, all of a sudden I am relaxed or something, and I am being breathed. I'm being lived.
Yes, exactly. And to me, it's one of those places that as soon as we get it, it's so obvious we can't believe we didn't see it. Because, right? Because there's nothing about living that we're doing. You know, we do things like worry, right? There's our contribution. But, you know, the blood and the stuff, all the stuff moving around and the breath going in and out, the heart pumping, all the, you know, I mean, you just get up out of a chair and walk across the, I mean, come on. And we're deluded into believing that I did that. Well, no, I didn't. And if what's living us suddenly decides not to, then we're not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it's just been these two experiences have made me just...
Religious?
Surprised and
happy.
Happy. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I just feel quite in awe of practice working on me.
Yeah. Yeah. And it does, doesn't it? And we know it. We know it. Again, we know it's not anything we're doing. Even the showing up is not what we're doing. So the gratitude for all of it is, it just becomes immense. You know, it's just everything is yes. Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you.
Well, I had to only share that because it was just
this is good. This is good. this is too good to keep to myself, really.
And it's like so mysterious, but so healing or it shows up in the body.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
I don't know. I'm not going to think about it.
Yeah, no. And that's a huge part of the practice, isn't it? Not thinking about it. Yeah, because I didn't think myself into this, and I have an intuitive sense that thinking is not going to do anything except get me out of it. So I don't want to do that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So I'm a deep bow to you.
Deep bow. Yeah. Take care of yourself. Enjoy yourself.
I do.
Okay, good. All right. Thank you, Marianne.
Gosho.
Gosho.
Thanks for joining us, Marianne. And Jerry, I love that idea of being lived. Feels like it gets all the pressure off me, you know, like decision making. Life has it. Life is guiding me.
Exactly. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Life's got this. Yeah. Yeah.
And life has another caller for us here.
Oh, good. Isn't that handy?
It is handy. Next caller, you are now live on the air. And would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Tom from San Jose.
Hey, Tom.
Hey. I'm really glad to be able to be on. I'm working on some different terminology for what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
I've been calling it job search for a long time. And it just seems insufficient. It seems more like, you know, an exploration, an opportunity, a time of introspection. Then, you know, and job search just doesn't really cut it.
Right, because it feels so out there, doesn't it? And actually everything that's happening is in here.
Yeah, that's a really good way to say it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like this trying to connect with quote-unquote reality, you know, quote-unquote the real world, and trying to express it in a way that real people would understand, but just, you know, not wanting to scare people, you know, by talking in a way where this is a very internal thing for me and having people wonder what's wrong with me. But just having an understanding for myself.
Exactly. You know, Tom, that's very wise. There is much about life that we and everyone else is well served by us keeping to ourselves. Yeah?
Yes.
Because, you know, it's just gonna cause people a wide range of things, right?
Yeah.
None of which is going to be helpful to them or us.
Yes. It's like my mother is worried enough about me. I don't need her thinking that I've gone off the deep end.
That's right. Yes. So you, that's such a perfect example. You want to appear as normal as possible for your mother, right? It's a kindness. Yeah. And, of course, everything in our conditioning would say, oh, well, you know, you're just being sneaky. You're being dishonest. You're not letting people know what's really going on. And the answer to that is, well, I'm not being sneaky and I'm not being dishonest, but it's true. Everybody doesn't need to know everything that's going on with me in order for me to be an honest person.
Yes, that is very good. And that has actually taken me a long time to learn, especially when it comes to my mother. So, but I'll tell you, I'm a lot happier having learned that.
Yes, and I bet she is. Yeah, she is too. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, you know, we're so prone to projecting inadequacy onto people. And so, you know, especially parents and children, and you're a grown man with children of your own, but it doesn't matter. You never will be as far as she's concerned, right?
That's right.
Yeah, you'll always be her little boy, and she always has to be concerned about you. And so So, yeah, make it as easy for her as possible. It's the loving thing to do.
Yes, and it frees me to have this understanding of myself that can be rich and detailed and so meaningful to me in a way that's just, it sets my heart on fire, you know? It's so incredible. And just letting that be this little intimate secret of my own.
That's right. And all that does for everybody else is give them this lit up guy that nobody needs to be concerned about.
Yes.
And everybody's got enough concerns of their own. They don't need to be concerned about us, right? And it's my teacher used to talk about it as being a social relief, right? People don't have to worry about you. You're good. I'm good. Yeah, I don't need anything. I'm good. And then everybody can go, oh, okay, all right. We can relax about Tom.
Mm-hmm.
He's fine. Yeah, even if we get to a place of, you know, I don't know how he's doing it, but it's undeniable that he's fine, or he certainly seems to be. Good.
Yes, and as this time has matured, I've just felt more and more comfortable with things that normally people are not comfortable with. The idea of not having money coming in, the idea of, you know, money is going out and none is coming in, and there is a finite amount, as people say, there is a finite amount of time this can go on, but I don't feel bound by that in the least. I really don't. It's going to happen the way life wants it to happen, whether I'm on board or not. So let's get on board so I can be that well-adjusted, present, happy, fulfilled, and intimately at home person.
Yeah, and it's probably... not that this is the motivation, but it's probably the very best thing that you can bring to a future employer.
Yes.
Because nobody needs an anxious, neurotic, frightened individual, or somebody, even somebody who's trying to fake it past that.
Well, yes. And I had an insight related to that early on in this process where one process does not lead to another. So if this process becomes fearful and grasping and scarce and all of these things, I will find a job that likes those parts of me, that enhances those parts of my experience. And I don't want that at all.
Yeah. Boy, that is a powerful insight. Yeah. Yeah, the whole notion of that whole notion of drawing things to us. And we can see how, if that's the person who goes out looking, that's what they're going to find.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Yeah, that's big. Mm.
It is. And so I find myself progressing and growing and learning things that I would not have learned had this not happened. And feeling grateful, feeling hopeful, feeling grounded in what today is, and not stuck looking to the future and worrying about the future. There's a lot of freedom, and that just that intimacy that I've been seeking, if just for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you know, the place that we can quickly get to with what you're describing is you're not missing today because you're worried about tomorrow. So that's just huge in itself, right? You get to have every moment of your life, which we don't have when we leave this moment being anxious and fearful about another moment.
So,
a lot of wisdom in that. Yeah.
Yeah, and I just had this insight drop in where it was like, boy, all this is going to be represented by on my little piece of paper resume is nothing. It's just going to be a blank space between jobs. But I'll know what this really was.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Personal transformation.
Yeah.
You probably don't want to write that in.
Yep.
But you know that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, you keep letting us know, okay?
I will. Thank you, Gusho.
All right. Thank you, Tom. Gusho.
Thanks for joining us, Tom. And Sherry, we are going to break for Good News Update, and then we'll return to talk with more callers.
All right. That sounds very good. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. And Jen, your guest is now live, and I'll turn it over to you.
Great. Thanks, Michael. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Scott, who is here to speak with us about his experience of using the interview RL technique in daily life. Welcome, Scott.
Hey, Jen.
Hey. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited. I was hearing Sherry reflect to one of the callers something about, like, it's just too good. You had to call and share what was going on, and that's kind of how I feel about this interview process. I think we've been doing this for almost a couple of years now, and I've loved it from day one, and it kind of moves in and out of like a primary focus, but I've been doing at least one of these interviews a day, and just like a lot of things with practice, you know, you commit to doing like formally once a day, and now it's available like kind of all the time if you're up for it. And that's really been my experience. And talk about learning to be a social relief. One of the primary ways that I've been using the interviewing is in relationship to my primary outside relationship with my partner. I just pretty regularly run into these sort of gut punches and like internal tantrums and getting upset. And I was going on this trip that I was a little bit anxious about going, and it's like, hey, bring the tool. bring the tool, because there's another way, you know. And I had an opportunity pretty quickly on. I actually got sick on the trip, and so we were on a backpacking trip, and so I was having a little retreat in my tent, which was fine, actually. And my partner had gone off with some other folks and a guide to go check out this thing that we were hiking around. And I'm having a great time. And then it's like I hear some people coming back, and I'm noticing she's not coming back to the tent. And the conversation starts, well, where is she, you know? And, well, I know what she's doing. She's da-da-da-daing and having fun and not checking in on you. And so this is a common thing. And generally with something like that, I'm kind of left with, there's a case against this poor person. And then the other side of it is, stop making such a big deal about it. Don't have your feel like I'm going to amp you up so you have a bunch of resentful feelings, but don't have those feelings. Yeah. And I was like, perfect opportunity. Right. Yeah. And so had my reporter right there. And gosh, there are some definite themes on doing these interviews, particularly around those issues. It's almost always, so, you know, you get to get your recorder ready. You imagine that person in that situation that they're in, that stuck place, kind of even kind of imagine them there in front of you. And just like, hey, tell me what's going on. And I honestly just do a lot of just reflecting, clarifying and drawing out. I don't ask a lot of questions. And, you know, eventually we just got to like just a really straightforward, clear words, I don't think she loves me. And it said so directly and clearly that it's weird. It almost feels like it's not me. Like I'm surprised by it.
Exactly.
And it's an immediate disidentification, which the technique helps you do, because you're only saying out loud what the facilitator is saying. So you're not saying out loud what the person is, which really helps me stay at center. And in that moment of, you know, then I asked a little bit more, and it's basically like, you know, I think I'm unlovable. And from that I'm going to project disidentifying to center, there's just like an immediate compassion that arises. No questioning that conclusion. No, just, wow, I didn't know you were feeling that way. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
And it's been interesting in those kinds of conversations, but it almost feels like the things are taken care of. The person somehow thought they were outside of love, and now they're met with compassion, and they're not, and we're back here.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, because your example is such a absolutely perfect example, because, you know, she's not coming back and checking on me. Like, she doesn't love me. And then through the interview technique, really, here's who he really wants to check in with, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And then he gets that. And I love your point of, I also feel like, I mean, and there's so many, you know, ways we can use recording and listening, like the two-hander recording. I think that came up in some recent call I was listening to, but kind of the distinction between those. So that has its place as well. But I think exactly as you're pointing out, one of the really powerful things about the interview technique is you're staying as the person who came into the tent to check in on him. You're not collapsing back into being the guy who really actually believes he's not lovable because, and the other brilliant thing you said, it's because he's talked into that, right? So
Definitely. The
voice is like, did you see how she's not, you know, she's just off doing that. Do you see, are you seeing how much she doesn't care? And then as soon as that guy is hooked, I mean, it's not even a big deal. Why are you such a big baby? She's just out and doing it. Why don't you?
Right. Yeah.
So then in comes this facilitator who wants to spend all his time with Scott. Yeah.
Happy to. Yeah.
Happy
and
to.
Yeah, because we just get to be in presence, in listening, in compassion. And, you know, the social relief part is, so normally there would be sort of, I would be amped up, but trying to act like I'm not. So just tension, right? The opposite of social relief. And at this point, I was open and feeling okay because of what you just reflected. And so she comes in and she's like, hey, how are you feeling? I brought you some tea. I got to show you these pictures of this. And I was there for that.
Yeah. Like, oh, that's so huge, Scott.
Yeah, let me, tell me more. Are you okay? And normally I wouldn't even barely hear that because I'd just be seething with identification resentment.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, my gosh, that is so huge. Yeah.
Go ahead, Jen.
I would project then whatever she did, she's no way that she was going to get through that narrative, right? That narrative was going to stand. And then it's again such a brilliant example, he wouldn't receive the love that is actually being offered to him from all directions.
Exactly. Yeah. He's stuck. He's locked in. And I think when we talk about, I mean, I don't know this, but when we talk about working out our own salvation diligently or moving from the one who needs to be saved to the one that can save, I think this is a tool that can do that.
Yeah. Amen. That's my experience. Yep.
Yeah. And on that day-to-day basis, so those are kind of places where I notice like a tension or a strong emotion. But as I've been practicing, it feels like there's another kind of arena of like, you know, Jen, we've talked about like kind of following the human around and learning about them. And the other day it just occurred like, hey, I kind of noticed that the human keeps like checking in on your skin, like both in the mirror and then sometimes even out on the street in a reflection of a storefront. And it's like, that doesn't seem like how they normally behave. Hey, can I ask about, like, do you want to talk about that? And it's like, this person had an issue with aging. And then that was also, in the end, about something about not being lovable. You know, they live in this very conditional world. And that's where they're going to live. And they're going to look for disapproval and not being loved unless we intervene. And that seems like such a great and easy way to intervene. And that it really doesn't take a lot of time or stepping out. Like even on the hike, I noticed, you know, getting triggered by something. If I just expand the awareness, I'm on the trail. I know where the trail is. I can feel the sun. I know where my feet are. I can check in. You know, hey, I noticed you're kind of upset about that question. Do you want to, you know, and there's that back and forth. I can even tell the people, oh, I'm making voice notes about the, what we just, you know, learned about the terrain or whatever.
Exactly.
And, you know, another time I was like at dinner and I, you know, here it goes, a little gut punch. Hey, I'm going to, I need to go to the restroom. I don't need to go to the restroom, mm-hmm. but I do need to go to the restroom because this is my job, you know, and I want to. And I already know if I don't do this, I've already seen 1,000, 100,000 times what occurs, and I'm just not willing for that. Nor does the person deserve that. Nor does the person across from me or whoever I'm with deserve that. So,
yes, exactly. Well, and what strikes me in everything you're saying, Todd, is that, you know, you start out by just making that commitment. You know, I'm going to do this every single day, and so you're building that relationship. So it becomes more, you know, you said, okay, so I do it once a day, but then it becomes available all over the place. And then it becomes the default. Instead of the default, the voice comes in, the default tends to be to go with the voice, get in that narrative, not even realizing that's happening. But the default begins to be that voice starts in, immediately there's a, hey, let's check in. And there's a process to do that. That muscle is so well ready for that, that that's what you immediately go to.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then the more we're practicing that and I'm having the experience, I'm not necessarily someone being compassionate. The compassion just was here when I came back to center or I disidentified. Okay. And then it's like, you know, that whole thing about, well, you are that awareness. You are that conscious, compassionate awareness and just the system, just deflecting. But when you have an actual experience and it, the awareness recognizes that, it really, that's the thing that's like, oh, that is what we are.
Yeah.
You know, like that really resonates and can't really be deflected by ego because that is my direct experience. And now I kind of start to go around life going more identified in quotes with that than the feeling victimized and all of that stuff simply through doing your practice.
Wow. I mean, such a huge testament to, you know, making that commitment and just staying with it. And just the transformation happens. You're not making it happen. It's just happening.
Yeah, just that hand's just reaching out, ready for us anytime. Yeah. And making a commitment, which I hear people talk about all the time, it's just a way to reach that hand back out and grab it, you know?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for being with us this afternoon to talk about it.
Thanks, Jen.
All right. Go happy.
Go happy.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Scott. And welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. That was exciting.
That was good. Yeah, that was really good. You know, my favorite part, of course, I mean, yes, the tools, yes, the all of that, but Scott talking about the commitment. You know, again, it's we make that kind of choice, we make that kind of decision, and here comes life. Just, you know, helping us every step of the way. Right? Not.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we're here. We're here for it. It's what we want, and we're saying it's what we want, and we're going to show up for it, and then it happens. It can't not. It can't not happen. With that kind of willingness and attentiveness, transformation is inevitable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's my experience. It's like a force of nature that is so driven.
Mm-hmm.
That is not
stop. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Beautiful. All right, let's find some more colors here, huh?
All right.
All righty. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry. Hi, Michael. This is Anne from England.
Hello, Anne.
Hello. Hi. How are you, Sherry?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good. So I let life decide whether I would come on the show tonight or not, and I didn't set an alarm, and would you know, it woke me up at 1 o'clock on the dot. So here I am.
I was just trying to work that out, Anne. You're up in the middle of the night. Yeah. Okay. Good. I got the time change right. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. So I really wanted to talk to you, Sherry, about something. So I'm really appreciative of having this opportunity. So thank you. Can I give you a bit of a little bit of background without going into too much of the content? Is that okay? And just to assure you, I don't think there's anything wrong with this situation whatsoever. I just want to know, get your view on how I'm dealing with it. And so what it is I have two kids and my partner has three. And we're very close. We're all very close. We've been together a long time now, over 20 years, and we kind of always set this not really sat down and agreed at it, but the idea is that we leave each other to be the parent of our own kids, and it works really well, and if we need some...
And these are not little kids, right? These are...
These are big kids. They're all in their 30s now, but they were teenagers when we got together, but they're all in their 30s now, yeah.
Okay, good.
All wonderful young people, for the most part, have their own lives. And then one of my partner's kids, who we're very close to, has a lot of struggles, shall we say. And we support him a lot. He comes back here to stay with us a lot for weeks on end. And again, for the most part, that's great. But obviously, being a grown-up now... comes with some issues. Notwithstanding that our space is not our space when this young man comes back to stay. We love him very deeply. We get on great. We have a great time. And so just give you that background. Now, the problem that comes with that is this young person, I think they think they're, this young man comes back almost like a man-child without being disrespectful. In that way. And so how I deal with it is I use, set clear boundaries about chores in the house, who take turns of cooking, shopping, all of that. And I put messages up on the fridge, who's doing what, where, because I don't want to get into arguments get into any arguments or stuff like that. I just want to be really clear. And that really works. And then this young person, for the most part, we'll fall in with that, and then slowly but slowly disintegrates. So
he becomes a teenager.
Yes, becomes a teenager. And my relationship with this young person is that I just say how it is for me without coming in an argument or anything like what I need. Yeah, my partner really struggles because.
Your partner what? I missed that word.
He really struggles because I can say things or I can set boundaries and I don't get any comeback. But when my partner sets boundaries, there's big comeback.
Yeah.
For a long time, he's let it go. And this young person is supposed to be coming back next week and now has a girlfriend in tow. And the typical thing he will do is say, can I come and see you for a few days? But then it'll end up being weeks. And... somehow that's been okay, but now with another person doing the same thing, can we come next week? And we have no idea how long it's going to be for. So now there's two people in the mix. We've never met his partner before. She sounds lovely. We'd be lovely to have her for a few days, but we don't want it to be
forever.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so how best to deal with this? So Simon, my parents' name is Simon, asked me what would I do, and I never say you should do this or you should do that. I just say, look, this is what works for me. Anyway, he listened to that, but then he decided to ask AI. And AI.
Oh my God.
I know.
Oh no! 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 Oh my God! That's what we need. AI doing parenting. Oh, good.
Okay. And I don't want to, I think it's just he wanted to see. Anyway, he wrote a message based on what AI said. And what I said was, I don't think that's a good idea, Simon. That sounds like AI. He's going to know that's AI. And of course, that was he did know straight away. Even though Simon changed the words, he knew straight away it was AI. And the reply my partner got was, oh, that's abominable. How can you treat someone like that? So disappointing, blah, blah. And all he'd said was basically, all he needed to say was, fine, you're both coming back, but we need to have a time limit. That's all. And it wasn't that personal. We do that with our other kids, and it's never an issue. And anyway, the response was I felt it was quite abusive. But you can't tell in the text, can you? You can just read words. You don't know how really that person's feeling. But I feel that Simon has given him an opportunity to deflect back to him that he doesn't need to take responsibility for letting people know what he's doing, taking for granted that someone else can come to the house on, you know, open-ended time. I don't know if I've explained that well, Sherry. It's quite complicated.
Yeah. Well, And so where are we now?
Yes, where are we now? And I was really heartbroken when I got that reply because I care about this person. I care about, let's say who he is. His name is Liam. I care about Liam a lot. He obviously feels offended, but I think his dad is just giving him an excuse to not take responsibility. And so now he's stopped talking to us. And obviously, it's quite upsetting. I had nothing to do with any of it other than supporting my partner, saying, look, I think you should talk to him rather than sending a text, you know. You're just saying what you need. I think Simon struggles with saying what he needs. Like, I need you to tell me how long you're staying for. I need you to be really clear, and blah, blah, blah. So I feel really sad. That's all, Jeff. Sorry. I feel really sad.
Those are painful lessons, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's painful. It's one of those, well, let's see, I'll never do that again. That was not a good idea. And is it now just in a wait and guess that after all these years of a good relationship, it's not going to end over this? It's just hurt feelings and upset, and don't you think?
And I hear what you're saying as well. But for me, I just feel that Liam has decided to take the victim role rather than take responsibility and bring in his dad and say, look, do you not want to stay? Can we stay? And it's because I think how Sam felt was he was just saying, he just needed to say how he felt. I can't have two people here on open. I think he just needed to say that. So how he handled it is not great, but I still think Liam has taken the victim role and like, oh, you don't want me, blah, blah, and all of this. You know, because like, to be honest, Sherry, even if you had rang him, I think there wouldn't have been a huge difference in reaction. And but this makes it worse because now it's our fault.
Right.
You know, we send this text rather, you know, so
Simon did. Actually, you didn't. You're just going to be tarred with the same brush. Right?
Well, yeah, he said actually the text was, oh, is it just you? I have to be disappointed. I haven't got anything to do with this. And I'm like, but I don't want to make it about me, and I don't want it to start having to defend myself, because I agree with his dad. I think we need to know information. We need to know how long you're staying for, how long your girlfriend's staying for. We need that information. It can't just be open-ended, a second person, you know.
But anyway,
it sounds like a lot of content. I'm just dealing with the knockout effects of it now. Sherry, to say, look, I need to know how long you're staying for. I need to know.
Yeah. Well, and so on our good news update, are you using something like the interview technique to check in with these folks? Because there are a number of folks who are having reactions to what happened, and it might be really helpful to just hear from everybody. Instead of it can get a little mushed together, you know, because this person feels this way, which leads to that, and then that, and then that, and then there's that, and there's that issue, and to sort of separate them out a little bit. Because there's the one who has some issues with Liam, probably some opinions about how Simon parents. and then also, you know, somebody who doesn't want hurt feelings and doesn't want that kind of rift. And I mean, there are a lot of folks having an experience around this.
You're absolutely right. And there's the person who also wants that young man to stand up and be an adult. So there's lots of people
yeah.
here. Yeah, that's a really good idea. Because I normally do interview, but I love the interview process. And it's taken me a few days even to get to think about calling you to ask for suggestions. So that's really a good suggestion.
Well, and you know, in doing this, it could be, this is one of my favorite things, and that's to have a family meeting. You know,
yes.
not with the rest of the family, just with you and all these people, but bring them all in. Have them all there at the same time. So because then it's kind of like what goes on inside of us as we move from aspect of the personality to aspect to aspect to aspect. And we can go through five or six people in a really short period of time, you know, sort of one sentence at a time. And so we can lose sight of how distinct the reactions are, and the feelings and the beliefs and all that make up one of those aspects. So to bring them all in and let everybody just talk about what their, you know, what their experience of it is could be fun.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because the bit about being upset about Liam being disappointed in me, that's very old wound. Anyway, it's nothing to do with Liam, someone being disappointed in me, you know. So there's lots of aspects, that really would really help. That's a great idea. And I don't see anything wrong with the whole situation. I actually think it's happened, so there is an alternative universe. So it's something that needed to happen.
Oh, it's been brewing.
Anyway.
Yes. It's been brewing for ages.
Yeah,
right?
For 37 years.
Yeah.
Because I see this, Liam, like, for me, this is no different than how he used to react, his dad used to react when he was a teenager. No different at all. Except
now
expectations.
Right, now he looks like an adult.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And is, right? He is. Because he's just like everybody else, right? If he did this family round table, there is a part of him who is, I'm guessing, a perfectly responsible adult. And then there's this teenager, and then there's the one who's got issues with his dad and with his stepmother and with this and with that and with his relationship with this woman and how she's going to perceive his family, and is that embarrassing in front of her? You know, I mean, he would have a lot going on too.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like this crowd of people, isn't it?
It's a mob. And I get the feeling, you know, it's tricky just to have two extra people in your space. And then when we realize, oh, we're probably looking at 100, 150 folks at any time, we can see, that's a bit much.
And it all centers around lack of communication. That's what it always has felt like to me. Clear communication, setting your boundaries for, you know, I feel like for me, what I've learned a lot, practice taught me, if I can set my boundaries, not that I'm protecting myself, but what's right for me or how am I comfortable with, and I can communicate that, then people normally respond in a way that is mature, or they don't, and then that's how it is. I'm okay with that.
Yes, and the other aspect of that is there's a way you are in your own home. There's a way you would be if you were in Liam's home.
Yes.
Right? And that's an aspect of it too, because it's your home, and there are ways that you want it to be, and that's fair.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's why I don't think I've been asked that question. It was just how it was all done, you know, the communication back then. But that's really helpful. Yes, I'm going to do the interview. But alongside all of this, I feel this is just another opportunity to learn to communicate, to be with what around, and something good will come out of it. Because
get to know everybody a little bit better. Everybody inside, outside, and all around.
So thank you very much, Sherry.
Thank you. Get some sleep now, okay?
Thank you.
All right. Good night. Bye. Go happy.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. And wow, Sherry, that was a fascinating in-depth story.
Yeah, there's nothing like family, right? To give us lots and lots of opportunities to look at stuff and get a little bit freer.
Yeah, to use the content as a way to get clearer about my own process.
Yeah. It's very helpful. And if we don't, you know, Anne was modeling that beautifully. You know, there's no dread of it. There's no, it should be different. I wish this hadn't happened. There's none of that. It's just, this is really interesting. This is where we are, and it's an opportunity to see more and get more clear and be, I'm going to project, be kinder and more loving. And I bet she would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that brings us to the top of the hour. And so thank you, Sherry. And
yeah.
Thanks to everyone.
Thanks to everyone, and thanks to you, Michael. Go happy.
Go happy.